Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, now that the hugs are done, we can continue. DG and all the officials, and to all those that we didn't see yesterday, we're saying happy belated Mother's Day, Women's Day. We hope you had a very good day yesterday as women. The month of August is still not over. DG, thanks for honoring this invitation, as usual. And I see that some of your soldiers are back. Also want to welcome them. We'll give this opportunity to you now for the presentation.
Thank you.
Honorable Chair, members, as you know, the presentation is on our DTI incentives that we have. So we've got a division in the department called TAO, which is the enterprise organization, which runs all our incentives. And firstly, just the team, which I think you've got on their slide their names, but the first one is our soldier that's back. Tumelo Chifuba is the DDG for this division, and Tumelo's just finished a year sabbatical in the U.S., and I'm sure he's very glad to be back, given the problems there. But then also the rest of the team, which I think we've got Kondani, who's in the division. Then we've got Gabriel, who's the Black Business Supplier program, Donald Mabusela, who handles the co-ops, and Maloto, who is in the DDG's office. Firstly, with regard to the team, I think it's important we brought them along because they are, as you know, they're very accessible. At short request, if you need assistance with any of the cooperative, with any of the schemes, they can be contacted, but also they do come out to visit the projects themselves. So, for example, last week Donald was here in Atlantis at the request of members. So the team is available to you, and then very quickly, and then also we have our group COO Jody, who you're very familiar with. Just very briefly, I'll just go through the first two slides just to give you an overview. Tumelo will take you through the details of all our schemes and how the division functions. But firstly, you'll see that we've got really two types of incentives in the DTI. The one could be called industrial kind of incentives to promote the manufacturing sector. Which is your enterprise investment program that used to be the SMEDP, the Small Enterprise Development Program. You've got the Automotive Investment Program, which is one of the very big ones, and so on. And then the other kind of incentives is what we call broadening participation type incentives. And there, and these are all completely new incentives that have only come in the past few years. The one is the Black Business Supplier Development Program, which is for BE enterprises, and then the Cooperatives Incentive Scheme, which is a very new one, which is really to help. Those schemes are growing fast. So in general, I mean, the first slide just shows you at a very broad level, the impact that our incentives are making. And one thing we can now say is that the incentives are having a big impact. I think the biggest one we can see is the automotive industry one, where with that incentive scheme we have already secured 14 billion rands of investment in the automotive industry. All the big companies from Toyota to VW to BMW, Mercedes-Benz, have all committed to investment. So it's not plans, it's already been completed, the 14 billion of incentive for the auto industry, but more importantly also for the components sector. For the first time, we've extended the incentives to the component sector. That's where the jobs are. That's where the small businesses are. And they are also benefiting. The other scheme, which is also, which we can say has had some measure of success, is the business process outsourcing. We've managed to secure a large number of foreign call center operators to locate within South Africa, the biggest one being Amazon.com being the famous one. And then the other incentive which is also having an effect is the film incentive that we introduced. We've been able to, over the past few years, get lots of films made in South Africa, which wouldn't have been made if it wasn't for that incentive scheme. We've just recently now had almost the full film made of Jock of the Bushveld, which has been completed and which is now on the screens, but we've also had others like Invictus, and we've got others coming up, Winnie, Nelson Mandela's movies and so on. So I think that on a whole, and then as I said, the new ones are starting to take some effect, but Tumelo will go into that. Then just finally from my side, it's just in terms of the budgetary allocation, with in overall terms now, incentives make up about 70% of our budget as DTI. And it's very important to note that there you can see about 3.7 billion, and that's excluding the automotive one. So roughly our incentives comes to about over 4.5 billion rand. And what is important to note is that this is 4.5 billion. The bulk of our budget goes directly to the private sector to stimulate co-investment in the industry. So all our incentives are in a sense joint ventures. If the private sector agrees to invest a certain amount, we then give a proportion of that. So it's co-investment taking place between the public and the private sector. And as I said, people like to always make a conflict between government and private sector, and I think our program is really to stimulate private sector investment, and as I said, in some cases we are seeing some fruits of these incentives. I think I'll hand over to Melo from here. Thank you.
Tumelo, before you continue, I just advise that new people have been introduced now in the department, that we also need to introduce ourselves. A new strategy has been set up by the department, new soldiers, so we've got to know who we're dealing with. I am Tumsani Kamete from KwaZulu-Natal and chairing this committee. I'll ask everybody to introduce him and herself for my left honors.
Madam Tulane, Committee Secretary.
Masifa Kodikhalo, Limpopo Province.
Kenneth Sinclair, Northern Cape.
Good morning, Elza van Lingen, Eastern Cape.
Good morning, Dave Abrams, Gauteng.
Good morning, Goeiemôre, Tumalang, Sambonane, Freddie Adams, Western Cape.
Good morning, Aaron Mguni, Free State.
Good morning, Abdullah Hanif, Committee Research.
Siroj Schneider, DTI.
Researcher from SAIA.
Good morning, Marcus Kwame from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thanks very much, Tumelo. You can continue.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to members of the committee, and thanks to the DG for being here with us and for the introduction that he has done. Chair, I'm just to give I think the DG has already gone through this, but in terms of the cluster of incentives that we have, we've got something on podium participation, competitiveness, then we've got services, manufacturing, and infrastructure. That's how we've tried to group them in the department, and I'll try and cover most of them. Starting with broadening participation, our focus here is really to try and make sure that we increase participation by historically disadvantaged individuals in the economy. As the DG has already alluded, it's a growing part of the department's work. Previously, when we were focused just on manufacturing, most of our incentives were not really focused, or we're not reaching marginalized communities, and we're also not reaching black entrepreneurs. So the idea is that we want to make sure that we grow existing black small enterprises and rural enterprises, and we may get them to become part of the mainstream of the economy. And the main instruments really is the Black Business Supply Development Program, the co-op scheme, the Emerging Exporters Development Program, and within the Enterprise Investment Program, we've also got a strong emphasis on SMMEs. Quickly, Chair, BBSDP, to explain the scheme, DG has already alluded to it again. It's an 80-20 cost-sharing scheme on business development services. So for things like where we assist small black companies with marketing activities, quality improvement, and so forth, we would cost share with them, where we pay 80% of the developmental activity and the enterprise pays 20%. And we've also expanded the scheme starting last year to look at things such as acquisition of machinery and equipment so that we bring technology and improve the productivity of these businesses. Then we've got the co-ops incentive scheme. Again, it's cost sharing. It's 90-10, whereby the DTI will pay 90% of the cost of an intervention, and the co-op will pay 10%. And then there's the project funding for emerging exporters. And what this scheme does, the last one, is to try and give, especially rural enterprises, an opportunity to begin to understand export markets. So, for instance, you take a group of people who are working in crafts, and you take them to an exhibition overseas, and so that they can see where their final products get sold. They can understand the demands of the customers, and in certain instances, they would be there themselves to do the selling in these exhibitions. In terms of funding, the budgets are quite small relative to other parts of the department, but these are budgets that are growing very, very fast. As we gain experience in working with this market, we hope to increase the value of the schemes. I was saying to the DG before the presentation that when we started with the Black Business Supply Development Program, our budget used to be something like 12 million rands per year. And with the experience, we've been able to make sure that we grow it. And now looking at the co-ops incentive scheme, I think one thing that comes clear in the statistic is that actually the percent ink there, I think, refers to the percentage of the approvals in which province are they located. And one thing that jumps up is that unlike the normal DTI incentives where the concentration is around KwaZulu, Western Cape, and Gauteng, you can see a much more better spread of activities. For instance, Limpopo accounts for 7% of GDP, but you know, in terms of the incentives, the co-op incentives, it actually gets 27% of our money. There are provinces, obviously, where we need to work much more closely with provincial governments and to also work with local governments to make sure, like the Northern Cape, where I think we could improve in terms of getting funding towards co-ops. But other than that, I think our spread it's proving to be much more different from the normal spread where we focus only on three provinces which made the biggest contribution to GDP. And to give the committee a sense of what kind of co-ops we are talking about, I've just taken one of the recent co-ops that is, you know, which we feel like has the kind of co-op that we'd like to promote. It's a fishery cooperative in Doornbaai where we took youth and that had fishing quotas, and we managed to organize them into co-op, and we assisted them with obtaining 3 boats, and we've also assisted them with they've got back office support around IT, marketing, and so forth that services the whole co-op, and then we've also provided them with mentoring, developing the business systems and so forth. And each of the co-op received an amount of $338,000 from the DTI. It's a new intervention that we are really quite proud of, and these are the pictures of the launch. And then the Black Business Supplier Development Program is a scheme that existed for quite a while, although we reworked it last year and relaunched it. In a way, I think the initial pilot around the BBSDP was around Gauteng, and as such, the kind of provincial spread that we had with the BBSDP was not as good as with the co-ops. And I guess maybe what it shows is that we are learning, in the sense that we launched the co-ops later and we achieved a much more even provincial spread. With the BBSDP, the approvals tended to be around Gauteng, mostly because we are located in Gauteng, and most small enterprises come to Johannesburg, but we've put together an infrastructure in different provinces where we've appointed people to assist us in all the 9 provinces where we've trained intermediaries to actually assist us with bringing applications to the DTI. Most of the enterprises that we are targeting here are really micro enterprises, but last year we changed the scheme to include some of the bigger small Black businesses, and I think we're looking at small businesses from now turnovers of between 250,000 to turnovers of about 35 million. It's not your typical BEE thing. It's the Black businesses that I think one of the requirements is that they have to be owner managed, and the manager has to be there working in the business themselves. And as an example also, which maybe might be closer, we took 2 examples from the Western Cape actually here. We have this service station which members of parliament, if they do go to Khayelitsha, might have seen. This is a before conversion and after conversion. We assisted them with putting together a fruit shop and a convenience store in Khayelitsha. And the entrepreneur put in about 400,000, and we also matched them with another 400,000 rand for getting equipment, doing the branding, and obviously I think he also got additional loans from small business institutions. And we created, I think the idea was to create 10 jobs, and we created about 12 new job opportunities. And with the project funding for emerging exporters, again, the provincial spread, as members will see, it's a little bit much more better than what we normally have with DTI incentives. Yeah, this scheme, as I've already indicated, it takes emerging exporters and tries to expose them to external markets. And this would be really be the smallest microenterprises. And people that we work here with are export councils, industry associations, municipalities. So typically a municipality would get these microenterprises and apply it to the DTI, and then we would pay for the cost of taking these people to or these entrepreneurs to exhibitions overseas, and I think also sometimes exhibitions locally. As an example of a project that we did in this space was with the Eastern Cape Development Corporations, where we took a number of handicraft makers to the Lisbon International Handicraft Exhibition. Now, going on services, our work in the services industry is really mostly around job creation, and it's around those kind of services which we believe are not only job creating internally in South Africa, but those services where we can also at the same time export services. Exports in services is a growing part of international trade, which we believe that South Africa also needs to tap into. And the instrument that we've got here is the Business Process Services, Film and TV, and the Tourism Support Program. Business Process Services, we've recently reworked the scheme such that the amount of incentives that a company that locates in South Africa gets is directly related to the number of jobs that are created. And those are the figures there. I think the new scheme was launched last year and we've had quite a lot of success. I'll go into that later on. And then film and TV production, this started as a scheme that was focused on bringing international films to South Africa, but later on we amended the scheme to also focus quite heavily on developing the local South African industry. And of course, we've got the Tourism Support Program, which is part of the EIP. In terms of the scheme that we phased out last year in BPO&O, we had approved projects worth about 16,000 jobs. And also, we brought in also quite a lot of major multinationals, such as Teleperformance, Genpact from India, and Aegis. Most of the international companies that are utilizing this scheme tend to be located around the Western Cape. They are also located around Gauteng and KZN. Mostly it has to do with the fact that telecoms infrastructure around those metropolis and those provinces tends to be better, and also linkages to international markets also tend to be better. With the Business Process Services scheme that we launched last year, we have targeted 30,000 jobs, and we already have applications that we have approved that we believe over the next 3 years will create 15,000 jobs. So we are getting close to our target. Again, we've had interest from major multinationals, and DJ has already mentioned Amazon, which is a U.S. multinational, Amicorp and Imagia. The investment is around the major metropolis, but it's not something that worries us that much. What we've seen in other countries like the Philippines is that international investors will first come into your key metropolises, and once you get saturation there then and they feel comfortable with the country, it's then that they start branching out to your more rural provinces. And we've seen that happening with the Philippines, where most of the job creation is now no longer around Manila, but it's in more rural areas of the Philippines. But you have to start somewhere if you want to tap into this market. Film and TV, as I indicated, and the slide shows that the number of... when we started with these schemes, it was mostly foreign productions. In fact, now the majority of the films that we are looking at now are South African films, and we also quite a lot of co-productions is where we've got joint ventures between South Africans and foreign producers with which we have a film treaty. And we also are having quite a lot of co-productions. And although South African films are the major films, most of the spending, most of the big budget films are films that are coming from the outside. So in terms of numbers, most of the films that we're working with are beginning to be by South African producers, but in terms of the amount of money spent per film, spent by the private sector, it's films. And we've been quite fortunate in the sense that South Africa has got quite a lot of good stories. So even when we are doing foreign films such as Winnie, such as Invictus, these are done by Hollywood studios, so they would be classified as foreign films, but the stories are South African films. And one other that we are proud of, we've, as a result of the incentive, Lifleng, which is one of the first African musicals we made in South Africa in more than 20 years. We managed to, and this is just gives a sense of the some of the films that we have sponsored, and that we've been able to. Now moving to tourism, the tourism scheme. Again, I think what stands out about the tourism scheme is that we took a deliberate decision that tourism markets that we believed are already saturated, we would not focus on. So, for instance, we don't look at projects within metropolitan areas of Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Durban because there's already tourism infrastructure in those cities. So where we'd work with infrastructure in these three provinces, it would be outside this metro. So we still do work in Gauteng. And I think also one can see that the statistics are much more better spread. Gauteng might have 23% of the grants that we spend, but it's actually less than Gauteng's contribution to GDP because they contribute 35% to GDP. So our focus is on smaller provinces. Limpopo, 9%, is actually much more bigger than the economy of Limpopo or its importance in the national economy. You know, its size. I think Limpopo contributes 7% of the GDP, Northwest, 18%, Northern Cape, 17%. So we believe this is the kind of geographic spread, ideally, that we would like to see. I think we could do much more better in the Free State and so forth. And in terms of jobs, it's also a scheme which is creating jobs and it's creating jobs in those provinces. And maybe one of the things that I might say is that, unlike with the SMEDP, with this scheme, we also insist that when we have a job, that it has to be a job that pays bargaining chamber wages. So there's a minimum wage that we insist on, especially since wages tend to be quite low in the hospitality industry. And then I would like to now move to manufacturing, which consumes most of our budget. Again, here the idea is that we support the department's industrial policy action plan, the IPAP and the new growth path, and the objectives really around job creation, around making sure there's value addition, and around making sure that we grow productive capacity in the manufacturing industry. And the key programs that we have here are the Manufacturing Investment Program, the CIP, which focuses on infrastructure, the IDZ, which we won't be touching on today, the Automotive Investment Scheme, and the new tax allowance scheme that we launched last year. Just maybe a main summary of the program. 12I is really focused, which is Section 12I of the Companies Act. It's a tax incentive. We don't provide cash grants, but companies that are investing between 30 million and 1.5 billion rand are able to claim an additional allowance, or they're able to save on tax, if at all they have been approved for this incentive by the DTI. And the savings can be quite huge in the sense that they could be anywhere between 30 to 900 million rands. And then there is the EIP, which is the Enterprise Investment Program, the Manufacturing Investment Program. We give a grant of between 15 to 30% of qualifying investment. And for people who are first-time foreign direct investors in South Africa, we are also able to give a rebate of 15% on the transportation cost of machinery. And then the DG has also spoken a little bit about the Automotive Investment Scheme, which gives a capital grant for auto manufacturers, the assemblers, and also for the first time we are focusing on auto component manufacturers. Talking about 12I, it's the tax incentive. It's focused mostly on industrial upgrading and also promoting new capacity in manufacturing. And in terms of upgrading, we've given focus to energy efficiency, to making sure that new investment utilizes process innovation. And this would be the things that we would look for in adjudicating an application or in making sure that you qualify for the incentives. We would see, is it energy efficient? Is it going to be improving production time, reducing production costs, or improving quality? And also, is it going to be acquiring goods from small and SMMEs? Is it located in an industrial development zone? Is it creating employment? Based on meeting this criteria or meeting a particular threshold, then you might be able to get an approval. And so far, it was launched last year in maybe June?
December.
And so far, we've approved 5 projects with a total of 4.3 billion rand in capital investment. And like most big investments, the direct job creation tends to be small, but then there's a huge multiplier in the economy as to where these projects are located. And again, most of the projects that we've got are in agro-processing, in chemicals, and a few in metals. And then moving to the Manufacturing Investment Program, which is a grant program, this is our main incentive that repays the SMEDP. Most of the grants really around the provinces of Gauteng, Western Cape, KZN, because this is where the manufacturing engine of the country is located, and for that reason, that's where most of the investment is taking place. And in terms of the sector profile of the companies that are getting the investment, most of them tend to follow closely by deliberate design of the incentives, the IPAP sectors that are focused on. So agro-processing would be a big part of that, chemical equipment and metals, chemicals would also be a big part. Those are the three biggest. And of the total investment of 10 billion that we hope to get from these approvals, about 35% of the investment is in place, 14% of the grants have already been paid, and 43% of the job creation is in place. Maybe just looking at those figures, I need to explain to members of the committee that we approve, but the grant is disbursed as the investment takes place and the job creation takes place. So you get an approval first, and it's only about upon confirmation of the investment and upon confirmation of having the job creation that the grant is paid out. And these are an example of some of the projects that we have done. There's a steel project in KZN, a bus project that we did in I think it was in the Eastern Cape, and an automotive project in the Western Cape. In terms of the automotive investment scheme, for the first time, we are focusing on job creation. This has traditionally been, you know, automotive, they've provided exports. But for now, we've expanded. We want to strengthen sourcing by the assemblers in the South African industry, because we believe that in the automotive industry, most of the job creation is going to be created in the components manufacturers, in the smaller businesses. And in terms of the job figures, the jobs, the 42,000 is the jobs in the plants that we've approved, and the additional jobs that we have created with the projects that we've approved, it's about 6,279 jobs. And that is the investment figure of the projects that we have approved. It's also a scheme that only started making approvals last year, but the investments here by the companies tend to be quite fairly huge investments, like Volkswagen, BMW, and so forth. The other cluster that we have, and maybe the last cluster, is for infrastructure, and here we've got the CIP program, and the idea with the critical infrastructure is to try and reduce the cost of logistics and also of infrastructure for projects and to do skills development. Talking about the critical infrastructure program, it's a 70-30 cost-sharing grant where the companies or the municipality or the province would pay 70% of developing the infrastructure and the DTI would pay 30% of, towards the cost of the infrastructure. And the kind of infrastructure that I'm talking about, it would be maybe bringing about electricity to an area. It would be making sure that if there is no road leading to where a potential factory or a potential mine is going to be located, we would cost share with the company for building that road. It could be bulk water. And normally we insist that infrastructure by its nature has to be for general use. So if we are doing a power connection, we would insist that there should be sufficient capacity to serve the local communities there. And if it's a road, it shouldn't be a private road, but it must be a road that other companies in that area should be able to utilize. Since we've had this scheme, we've supported 42 projects, and this is about 10 years worth of work since 2001, I think, and supported projects with an investment value of about $88 billion. And the grants that we have approved are close to about $1 billion, and the total infrastructure development cost is $5.3 billion. Again, here, critical infrastructure, the good thing about it also is that we have a very good provincial spread. Our idea here is that most of the time, projects that would struggle to get infrastructure are projects actually that are located in rural areas where infrastructure is not so good. So, for instance, we have 7 projects located in the northwest. We've got 3 projects in Limpopo, 6 projects in Mpumalanga, 4 projects in the Northern Cape. So this is the kind of provincial spread, again, that we think is appropriate for a program like this, where the focus really should be around areas in the rural areas where you can facilitate big investment projects. And we've got an example of a project that we did in Manhattan in the Northern Cape. The project that we did was to build a road, to put an airstrip, to build a bridge, and it was facilitating investment in an alluvial mining operation in the Northern Cape with quite good production capabilities. And our partners was the Northern Cape Department of Transport and Public Works, and we contributed 35%. The mining company contributed 5% because it was mostly public infrastructure, and the department contributed 5% to the cost of the project. And so far, we created 250 jobs in the process of construction and also in the investment in the mine itself. And then we've got other incentives that are focused on competitiveness promotion. And the idea here is to do industrial upgrading and to promote exports. Just a summary of those incentives. We've got the export marketing and investment assistance. It's a company whereby we take mostly, it's a scheme whereby we take mostly small and medium enterprises. Again, we take them to exhibitions overseas, and we'd pay for close to 80% of the cost of the flight ticket to go to the market, and we pay also for the cost of transporting exhibition material. And then we've got a sector-specific assistance scheme, and this scheme allows export councils, business associations, again, to develop joint marketing plans or to recruit FDI that fulfills a particular objective in South Africa. And we've also got a capital project feasibility program that is trying to assist in the export of capital goods. The distribution, again, for EMEA would tend to be around, provincial distribution would tend to be around where we've got our manufacturers, because these are the people who are doing the export. And this would be the sectoral spread. Now, for the last scheme, I just wanted to talk about a little bit about the Capital Project Feasibility Program. Here, what we do, we provide South African engineering companies with an incentive to do feasibility studies in Africa. So they would do the feasibility study with the idea that if the project goes ahead, then South African manufacturers would be the ones who supply the capital goods to this program. And the reason we are doing this, you know, the thing with capital goods is that once you've sold somebody a particular piece of machinery, the real profits come not from selling the machinery, but the exports in terms of servicing, in terms of spare parts. So once you are able to have an installed base throughout the continent, then it's repeat business. Those exports continuously happen. And it's a scheme that we are looking at now to see how we can also tap into some of the trade partnerships that the department is developing around BRICS and so forth, to see can we expand it to get South African companies to be looking at doing that kind of work. I've tried to summarize. I know it's quite a lot of work, but this kind of gives the flavor of the work that we are doing. Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Chief.
Thanks, Tomelo. Just a final point, Mr. Chair, is that you will see we haven't dealt with the IDZs, because we will be making or asking permission to do a special presentation. As you know, we're introducing legislation and some new ideas around IDZs. So we will deal with it then. Thank you.
Thanks, DG. Honorable members, I know Honorable Mguni, I see the Free State now is beginning to look like a step province. And I'm sure Honorable Mguni has been asking these questions, and it's fortunate, DG, that you spoke about the ITZ, because he had approached the committee about us doing something in the Free State. But at the same time, the committee will be going to two provinces, I think Northwest and Mpumalanga. So we'd want the department to assist us, even with the presentation, what has been presented on things that we'll do some oversight on. Just like the garages that we saw in the Western Cape, we'd want to see them in those provinces, what has been done, and so on. Honourable members, it's time for questions of clarity. And Mr. Mguni, I know you'll be the first one.
No, Chief President, I just want to get two questions, but I'd like to register my, toying. Because, Chief President, as you can see, that the Free State is getting less, about 1% approval, 2% approval of most of the projects that have been presented. My question, Chairperson, is on this tourism supporting, tourism support, because you can see that provinces that are getting more support are provinces that are actually contributing more to the GDP. Now, the fact is that whether we like it or not, smaller provinces like Free State, Northern Cape, they never ever match their GDP contribution to Gauteng or Western Cape, and also. I think it's unfair that you support in tourism provinces that are actually doing well in tourism, unlike those that are not doing so well, because we'll never ever be able to attract as much tourists as Gauteng or Western Cape. But there are a lot of activities or tourist sites that could be actually, with some funding, be developed so that even provinces like the Free State or Northern Cape can be visited. I'm querying the formula you are using to support provinces that are getting more or are contributing especially more to the GDP than those that are not contributing much. My second question, Chief President, is on these funds to critical infrastructure program. Is that it's for rural areas to facilitate big investment projects. Chairperson, I just want to find out from the DG or from the department that there is this talk about the logistic hub in the Free State in Harrismith. And I've met some of the investors there, or other people who are interested to invest there. They said they need about 300 million. The province should submit, come up with about 300 million or more than that for infrastructure. And then they are prepared to plow in about 7 billion US dollars, I'm told. So how can the department either help, or is the department doing anything about it? Because I see that you don't have any project in the Free State. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Nguni. I'm sure there are tourism attraction sites in the Free State. We'll identify them. Honorable Sinclair.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, I appreciate the presentation and the frankness about the reality of certain of these aspects and so on, but I think the reality is that it's fine that we have these incentives, but if there's not clearer direction from the political leadership about how do we get out of this mold, regarding what Honorable Nguni's now said, then I think we will talk for the next 3 years about this whole issue. You know, in all those slides where you show the South African scenario with the 9 provinces and so on, except maybe for the one where there was the investment in the mining sector, the rest, you can almost say that 75% of the allocation, in whatever form it is, goes to what I call the Golden Triangle, your Gauteng, your Western Cape, and your KZN. Now, with due respect, I think to compare South Africa with the Philippines is a bit of an oversimplification of the situation. I mean, you can take a bicycle and you can drive around Philippines in one day. But the reality is, if we want to grow the economy of the broader South Africa, we must get to the other 6 provinces. And unfortunately, up to now, we didn't mention, because there's many reasons. I remain critical, you know, for instance, the old story. The government, the powers that be, decided the state diamond trader must go back to Johannesburg. It doesn't make sense. The primary place for the state diamond trader must be Kimberley, where you source the diamonds. But that's a policy issue which, once again, the decision has been taken. So the first point that I want to make, Chairperson, is really, you know, the poverty levels and the unemployment is killing our people in the rural areas. And departments like the DTI, specifically with the grants, need to have a different approach in terms of getting to the places where we need the infrastructure, we need the jobs, and so on. So that is my first remark, and maybe also plea to say, I mean, let's as the leadership of the department, really work on it to get to those places. Now, the second issue, Chairperson, is the issue about once an entrepreneur or enterprise decided to engage government, you know, what is the effect of this thing? Now, I must say that, you know, I'm trying on many instances, not just this department, but to look in terms of how can the industry in the Northern Cape, for instance, benefit from some of these incentives. And I must say it's not easy, really. I mean, you can go to the NEF, you can go to the IDC, fortunately, I mean, Suraj is here, you know, and she's very effective. But despite those things, it takes 2 years. Now, Mr. DG, certainly it must be quick, you know. So my second plea is let's work on the turnaround time of engaging this issue. The third issue, Chair, is the issue about the transformation of society and of industry. Now, I want to raise a specific issue because, once again, it's a typical example. One of the other committees, energy, we deal with the transformation of the petroleum industry. Now, if you, in these days, try to get a black owner to own a garage, the one that you've shown me, it's almost a logistical nightmare. Because the people, firstly, don't have the collateral to put down as a deposit for a garage. Now, where do you go? You go to the NEF or you go to whoever. They want statements. And what do the people do? Eventually, they get so disgruntled. They go to the business partners, or what's they call, what are they called? Business partners.
And the business partners then fund purely white companies because they've got the credit rating to be successful in that industry. So in terms of your grants here, I think it's also necessary. I just used the example of the petrol industry. But I think it's necessary that you must have a package approach about, you know, what can the NEF offer, what can this one offer, what can that offer. And otherwise, you know, on paper we will say no, but the transformation of the economy is not working. But the reality is that we don't use the instruments that they're very specific and correct. The last issue, Che, is the issue about this 12I. I think I raised it previously. I don't know if it was by way of a question or in the committee or whatever. Once again, it's difficult to access this. But secondly, I just attended the talk one day, and people say, but it's not new. It's an old incentive that's there. But it's not very effective to access it. Once again, it takes a long time to roll out and so on. So maybe we must just get greater clarity. And maybe, I must say, DGA, maybe I don't have all the facts about that. But the point that I want to make is if we put these incentives out, let's make it accessible and effective to engage. Thank you.
Any other question? Honorable Fong Liang, then Honorable Adam.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I don't know why I've got glasses on my nose because I still find it very difficult to read the print here. So you just got to be patient with me a little bit, please. I wanted to ask you the tourism support program. You specifically say to promote job creation on non-traditional tourism clusters. I suppose if I go and read up about it, I can find it. But if you can just tell me a little bit, is it really a non-traditional area, an area that's off the route, or is it rural development? Then somewhere, and I can't find it now, and an issue of energy that you're spending money on in the Eastern Cape. I'd like to know what that is all about.
Which slide?
It's on critical infrastructure program, and it's the national map.
Okay.
You didn't mention, oh, it's the one before, 31, I think. Yes. It says manufacturing energy 3,200 direct jobs for the Eastern Cape.
Okay.
I'm wondering about the bulk services that you are talking about that you could help with, because I can think, for instance, of the village of state level that has no water. There's a fountain, but they need money. The project has been approved, the EIA has been done, but they need something like 66 million to do the project to get permanent water for the village. And it's not possible. Would you consider such a project? And if so, how do we go about it? Then your marketing and investment program, or your exporting program, I don't know which one, where would you put the boat building industry in, and who do I talk to in that regard? And then the competitiveness promotion that you do for the countries in Africa, is that basically giving the job for due diligence studies on the various projects to see whether we're going to fund that or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, TG and
a man from the States.
Honorable Sinclair, your mic, please.
Sorry. Copy stamp for sabotage us here this morning, I see. No, thank you, Chair. Thank you, DJ, and our man from the States for the informed briefing that you've given us. Let me from the offset, Chair, thank Saraj and the department for the help that they're giving us, DG. Really, it's really been great to deal with this department because of the quick response and services that you get. It really makes us proud of our department of DTI and the leadership that you have shown in this department. Chair, you know, I'm just worried about what the DDG has said in terms of the tourism sector in the Western Cape. But as a whole, you know that the Western Cape government has suspended most of the what do you call it, the agencies, like your Red Door and all those agencies, because they are busy now establishing one big agency, which is called the Economic Development Agency. I think that will be launched within the next couple of weeks or days. The point is that, you know, our tourism industry, in specifically in the Western Cape, it's still in the hands of the Advantage people. If you look down in the southern suburbs where I come from right down from Wynberg, right down to Cape Point, Lisenberg, Fisher, a whole lot, also on the other side, Scarborough, Mystic Cliffs, and all those things, it's still in the hands of the Advantage. The historically disadvantaged, I mean, they open up a tourist business today, but tomorrow it flops because, first of all, they haven't got the money, there is no hardly incentives, there is no schemes that can assist them. A lot of them went to Red Door, but now Red Door is closed, and a lot of them went to apply at the provincial government, but it's been said that everything must be put on hold until this Economic Development Agency comes or are being formed, but they haven't got assurance that this agency will look at that tourism industry. Now, I'm worried about if you say that it's not going to happen in the metropoles where tourist entrepreneurs could be created. You know, looking down in the southern suburbs, we hardly have one, not even one, B&B in historically disadvantaged area. You take Vrygrond, you take Musenberg, you take Ocean View, you take Redhill, you take Masipumalele, not one, but tourists are in and out and passing them every day, on a daily basis, going to Cape Point, going to the beach, going to the sea. So it's a worrying factor. How can the department assist us in getting those people off the ground? Also with the fisheries, fishing industry, we DG also there, thank you very much. We are doing great. It's coming to fruition now with the cooperatives that's there. But I think at the moment the process is still a bit too slow. You know, because we've got CEDA on one hand and DTR on the other hand, although we have now tried to combine the two with DTI and CEDA so that we can have one process running. But the worrying factor is that SMMEs, business people, small business people, specifically your HDIs in the Western Cape, does not get a chance to grow. Even Westgrow has expressed their dissatisfaction in terms of the growth of SMMEs, small business, black entrepreneurs down here in the Western Cape. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me join my colleague and welcome the presentation. It was a comprehensive one. I can see that the aim of the department is to promote broader economic participation in the economy through the provision of incentive support measures. But when I check on the report whereby the province, they are helping the provinces, Limpopo is not doing just well. So, especially on from page 6, on the slide where they are talking about the project funding for emerging exporters, I just want to know how can we help this, especially in Limpopo province,
so that we increase the participation. And I believe the people that are historically disadvantaged will be able to at least get jobs. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Let me start, DJ, by saying it is true that the department is one of the departments where you can phone the DG and the DDGs and Saroj at any time. They don't take offense to that. That is very good. Please keep it up. We are so accessible to us as members. And we always say so. When we even deal with other departments, we say, but DTI is accessible. So keep it up. What I want to check is the issue on the co-ops. Even though I don't want to say much because a new strategy is being put in place. But what different approach are we going to have now, given the history of the co-ops in South Africa? Did we really identify specific things that now we're going to use this approach? I was hoping Honorable Abrahams was going to raise this question now. She had a very good Women's Day. On the slides, you show where people have been assisted and projects, and you give percentage of females. But there's nothing on disabled people that you'd say wherever, whether on broadening participation, on tourism, or whatever, or what's happening to them. The other issue would be, I'll still want to see the project funding for emerging exporters in rural areas. I mean, rural areas. This is because I think about 2 years ago I asked for a list of the beneficiaries and it didn't look good, you know, and I still want to see it, you know, just targeting rural areas because there are quite a number of people who can export. Lastly would be the issue of the tourism support program. Even if it's not today, but also would want to see the list of the beneficiaries on this issue. I've got two or three communities that have been applying for tourism support and so on. I'll do a follow-up on those, but they haven't been assisted. But I'm sure there's a new and a better approach now where they can benefit. Did you?
Thanks. As usual, I'll take the easy questions and then the Tumelo and the team can help with the difficult ones. I think on a broad level, I think the number of the honorable members have raised the general problem about we need to do more for the let's say the marginal provinces, Limpopo, Free State, Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, and so on. I think that if I can make the general point rather than the specifics, I think in principle, I think as DTI we will be. As I said, there's been some progress over the past year or two. There's been completely new incentives that we've introduced. I think it's still not the way we want it to be, but if I can just take the example of the co-ops, as you know, that scheme has been growing, the BBSDP scheme has been growing, but we find that the failure rate is highest amongst those businesses. So in a sense, we've got sort of a problem we have to solve. On the one hand, we're trying to expand the program rapidly. But then on the other hand, we get a high failure rate because, as you said, if it's a co-op, they've got limited access to markets. They start off in 6 months' time, they collapse. I think the one point we want to make as DTI, first of all, we think that if we're going to broaden participation in the economy, we must accept, as other countries have done, that there is a higher failure rate among small businesses and amongst co-ops. And we must accept that. And what we must look at and is to see how we can expand support. And I think the chairman asked about the co-ops. Now, as I said, it's a difficult one, and I think what we're looking at is, firstly, for example, on co-ops, we're thinking about this idea of getting more what used to be in the agricultural sector, you call them extension offices, where people, where you don't just give people the loan, but also you give them some support, some management support to help with getting access to machinery, to help them with marketing and so on. I think we are going to be, as a department, looking at putting more staff available to work with co-ops and do more hand-holding and mentoring and getting in experts to help with that. So it's not just the grant, but also some direct support. So hopefully that will improve. But as I said, we're learning all the time and we want to expand that program. The other thing about helping communities is that, and small businesses, is I think there's two problems that we're dealing with. The one is the financing problem and the supply side problem. But I think the biggest problem our marginalized face is on the marketing side, is on the demand side of the economy, is to somehow create that link between the co-op can produce everything, they can be very good farmers, but if ShopRite Checkers doesn't buy their goods, there's going to always be a problem. So I think what we are thinking about is to try to create more, and I think maybe we must go before. Unfortunately, we took away all the support structures post-94 for the agricultural sector. You used to have something called marketing boards, where, in a sense, the individual farmer didn't have to worry about marketing his product and getting it into Europe. You know, there was a marketing board which took care of that. And I think we were a very stupid country to dislodge all those things on the advice of the World Bank and others. And I think we're going to have to start going back to getting some sort of marketing support to small businesses and to cooperatives and so on. So hopefully in the new co-ops strategy, we'll start introducing that kind of ways in which we can assist people, not only with money, but also with access to the markets aside. And as I said, also we have to give more direct technical assistance as well through these kind of extension offices. So that then I think, if I can go into the specifics with regard to the Free State issue, Mr. Mguni. Yes, we have been briefed about the two potential IDZs or SEZs that we can have in the Free State. The one mentioned was the Harry Smith one. So I think as I said, we were presenting on the IDZs, but as you know, before it was very limited, the IDZs, it had to be linked to an international port or airport. So you only had it in Kucha, in East London, in Richards Bay, in Gauteng, the Our Tambo Airport. So we want to extend that definition now and do away with that. What we're calling is now we're going to have SEZs, special economic zones, which doesn't have to be linked to an international port or airport, which means the other provinces can all have industrial zones that we can develop. So it will be like industrial parks type thing which we can help. So I think we're going to kick off, and as I said, we don't have to wait for the legislation and everything to be in place. And I think the one project which we have at MINMEC look at is the issue of the that logistics hub in the Free State. So I think we will definitely take that up and try to fast track that project in there. Then with regard to Mr. Sinclair's point, I think the point is taken that maybe, as I said, there has been the problem of turnaround times, and also the different agencies working differently. You get IDC, NEF, and then our grant program all looking separately at different projects and so on. I think the point is taken, and I think we're starting to slowly put in teams where we're going to try to work through where we can respond more rapidly to programs on a request basis, that if a province asks us to come out or if anybody asks us to come out, we can send out a team to look at the application, and we don't have to wait for you to come to Pretoria to do your application. So we're trying to put in place, and in a few months' time, that team should be fully up and running to be able to respond rapidly. Then I think the point is a very good point, because we've got this other problem with incentives, is called double dipping. There's always a view you mustn't people go all over, you know, they go to the IDC, they get a loan there, they go to NF, get another loan, go to Kula, go to the thingy, and we sort of people just go and that. But I think that obviously there is abuse, but I think we must accept the principle that I think if we're going to get especially marginal and BEE type, I think we're going to have to put more packages of support in place, which with the grant funding helps from DTI, but then on top of that, you get other things from the agency, and we work more coordinated. So we will be looking at that. In terms of the 12i scheme, I think that from what I know, that I think, as you say, obviously we had the SIP scheme, the Strategic Investment Program a few years ago. That was also a tax-based scheme. But that thing, as you know, that thing was fully used up. We used the $5 billion that was given. And then Treasury, they didn't proceed with extending that program. After the Industrial Policy Action Plan and after some pressure from us, we now have this 12i, which is another, which, as I said, we really think this program can work. We've had, as I said, since it opened in December, we've been able to, I think that the turnaround times have been, we've been quite fast on the scheme. And we've approved already seven applications. The only thing that could be is that we've got, obviously, you get companies that have already made investments. Now they are trying to get access to the scheme. Now the problem is, like, for example, you have Sasol or Mittal or these companies. Now, before, what happened under the previous scheme, they did the same. And we said, we don't want brownfield ventures. We want to try to get more greenfield, new investments, not just expansions, because then all the money gets used on things which are already happening. And which. So, as I said, we're trying to really get it for new type of investments. And that's why we have said to the guys who have been supporting forever, that I think we have to use this money, because it's a limited allocation and we have to use it very strategically. But I think that 12i is proceeding, but I think the general point is taken. Then I think on state level, I think we can maybe look at sending out our CIP team if you can give Siraj the details, and then our critical infrastructure team can go look at it. But they have been looking at, I know in other areas there has been a problem with farmers, and as I said, traditionally we are focused obviously on manufacturing, and we've not gone into agriculture. But as I said, because of the needs now, the team has, for example, gone to assist. One of the biggest things with getting thing going was water, and so they're starting to get into that area. But I think we'll have to assess it. Obviously, social infrastructure is another department's work. But if we can see a link to economic thing, then we can. But let's have a visit, and then we can also meet with the municipality and everybody else around that. Boat building. This is area. Currently, the only incentives we have now is under the IDC, which is lending for boat building. We've just added this new sector to the IPAP, to the Industrial Policy Action Plan, as a new area to help is the boat building industry. And this industry is because of the exchange rate. Is suffering very badly, and because of the recession, obviously it's a sort of industry which has faced very much difficulty. So we are looking at how we can. I know there are frustrations. We've met with this industry, and we are looking. As I said, we don't have like we have for clothing and for autos. We don't have a dedicated support facility for the boat building. But I think we will definitely be looking at what we can do more for the boat building. Then on the African continent issue, we've got the scheme where we do feasibility studies. It's mainly for feasibility studies, but this is very important because, you know, everybody else, for example, just looking at all the infrastructure projects in Africa now, the road and rail, it's all being won by other countries. South African companies are not faring well. But we've discovered that what the reason is for that is that if you take, for example, all these projects in DFID, which is the British all the feasibility studies are done by the British are sponsoring these feasibility projects. Now, the trick is obviously once you do the feasibility study as a company, when they put out the tender, then you're the one who's completely ready with your documents because somehow they obviously hand it over to each other and so on. So government and, as I said, government and the private sector work so well around these projects. The other, the Chinese, are doing exactly the same. So that's why, as I said, we've got this program. It's still very small. We will be approaching Treasury in the next MTF to expand this program so that we can do more, give our companies access to more use this fund to do the feasibility studies, then they can be better positioned to take advantage of this contract that's coming. Because as you know, they're busy with the North-South Corridor, which is right from Dar es Salaam to Durban. They're building right down the road and the rails. And already, DFID is already doing all the feasibility studies, so we're going to have to get in very quickly if we're going to get the South African companies into this, the infrastructure boom in Africa. I think on the Western Cape, on the road, the Red Door and the closing down of the small business, we have had some engagement with the province and with CEDA and the Red Door. And we CEDA will be taking over some of the Red Door projects so that we do keep the support going for small business. So as I said, they're taking the ones which, and maybe we can have an interaction with them, but we are arranging to take over and make them CEDA. And as I said, we are engaged with the province to see how we can still support a small business. I take the point that we're going to have to just, as I said, try to increase the response times and so on. I think the point about Limpopo is the other area where I think we're looking at one of the SEZs, one of these special economic zones, to locate one of them in the Limpopo province, and I think we will be having discussions around that as well. Then, Mr. Chairman, I'll hand over the other ones.
Yeah, in your comments, I'll still pursue the issue of the co-ops in your comments, DDG, that aren't you really taking even some lessons from Kenya about co-ops?
Thanks, Chair. I think the DG, though, has covered most of the areas. Maybe just to clarify, there was an issue asked by Mr. Adams regarding the tourism support program. What you did, because we are aware also of the fact that even in the metros, the tourism infrastructure tends to be located in particular areas. So what we did, we said that if at all it's a project that is located in a historically disadvantaged area. So we exclude Cape Town and we exclude Durban and Johannesburg, but if somebody is starting a project in Soweto or in Khayelitsha or in KwaMashu, then we are able to look at those projects because we are aware that there is untapped potential there and that it's difficult. And maybe to add on what the DG was saying, I'm not aware of the latest but thing around boat building, but I do know that previously we have worked with the boat building industry around they qualify for the MIP, and we've worked quite a lot with them around EMEA, especially taking them to exhibitions in different parts. I think what DG says that they do deserve particular attention now because of the issues of the exchange rate and so forth, and there's work in the department to look at that. With co-ops, that's a difficult one. I know that there is work that is happening in the department at the moment. To look at a new agency that is going to be working with co-ops. Internally, we within TIO working on the incentive. You see, the work in the department is displayed between the empowerment division that looks broadly after co-ops. Maybe the DG can fill in later. That looks after co-ops. We are focused more at the enterprise level Although we work with the people in the policy division, but we focus more on enterprise development within the co-ops. So in terms of our internal work, what we are looking at is to improve on the support measures that we are giving to co-ops. But I know that there is work around the co-ops agency about having dedicated training institutions for co-ops, but I'm not really, I'm not really on top of those plans about what is happening. And on disabled people, we haven't really started keeping statistics on that. So it's an area that is a challenge at the moment, and that most probably we will have to start looking at more in the future. I know there's some work that we did some time ago within the department itself, where we established a call center in Soweto that was staffed by disabled people. But in terms of working, having a particular program for disabled entrepreneurs, it's worked most probably. We've just started moving into the market of first looking at black entrepreneurs and cooperatives, but I'm sure in the future it's some. As we gain more experience with more sectorally, you know, programs targeted at economic participation, it's something that we should be looking at. I think DG covered most of the big policy issues. I don't know whether my colleagues are able to add on in that.
Even when they are going to add, I just want to say people with disabilities are also part of the black entrepreneurs. They shouldn't be treated differently. They should form part of the pool of black entrepreneurs, and they must be seen.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of disabilities, we've just finished a pilot project. We hadn't yet reported to the DDG on how it went. We've done Limpopo, Northern Cape and the Free State. So that information will be going to him, and the response was actually very good, very overwhelming. There are really many disabled entrepreneurs. There was this question on the TSP and the stipulation that it doesn't cover non-traditional areas. It's not geographic areas, but it's activities where the scheme tries to encourage entrepreneurs in this sector to move away from bed and breakfast and chalets and guest houses, so that it moves into areas like adventure, which is more exciting for many tourists, not to mention the fact that there are enough beds in a number of cases. So we're looking more at cultural villages, theme parks, bungee jumping, sky cars, and all those other activities, just so that at least the package, when we say the South African tourism package, it's a more diversified package than is currently the case. That, I think, is raising your concern on the transformation, because we're now talking about higher capital investment in the sector. But when we look at developing the sector broadly, it's something that needs to be done.
Then, Gerald, your question around the co-ops, as I said, I think we will be coming shortly with the new co-op strategy. And as I said, we agree we need a big push on this front, that if we're going to deal with exclusion, if we're going to deal with the problems of underdevelopment, and if we're going to deal with just our rural areas and our agricultural sector, I think co-ops is going to be one of the pillars for that. So I think we will be looking at that. Obviously, we need new ideas, but we need new, as I said, we need new resources and we need new capacity if we're going to grow that sector. As you know, everywhere in the world, this is one sector which is very strongly subsidized. In the whole of Europe, the agricultural sector. I mean, unlike our incentives, as you can see, our incentives is very different to the incentives you get in Europe and elsewhere. There, they have permanent subsidies. Here, we give once-off support
to help, in a sense, new startups and so on. And it's not a forever a subsidy. So I think there's some positives about ours, but especially in the agricultural sector, in the cooperative sector, we're going to have to look at a much more substantial level of support for this sector if we're going to have an impact there. But I think when we bring that, we can debate that in more detail. I think the final point to make is that I think we, as I said, we've got twin objectives, both as a department and as a country. We have to get the growth going. We have to expand our industrial and manufacturing base. That's the only way we're going to prosper as a country. So what we're saying is that the one of let's say, broadening participation, developing the marginal areas, we're not saying it can't be an either or. It has to be both. We have to develop the Gautengs, the Durbans, the metropolitan, the strong industrial areas. They must still be a pillar of our growth. But what we're saying, not to the exclusion, but in addition to that, and in, we must put significant resources now into the other areas as well. And as I said, with the new SEZ program, we're going to try to see that there's additional resources made available, especially for the weaker provinces, whatever we call them, but so that we do have integrated development. But I think it's very important to see that we have to have both. If you start taking away from your metropolitan areas, so it's not to take away from anybody, it's to add additional support to these areas. That's, I think, the thrust.
Thanks, DJ. Thank you, Chair. Just also to indicate, Chair, that we're also busy with a project on relooking the processes around the incentive administration and our internal processes. So we welcome the suggestions because I think our management information systems currently have some limitations in terms of the data that we can get. So the idea is that we have a system that's able to extract all of the relevant information. That process that project is in process, and the DJ has given us some very sharp deadlines. So I think going forward, the information that we present to the committee would be a lot more robust. Thank you.
Any follow-up on our aid adapts?
And also, excuse me, Chair. No, I see you were quite impressed with Honourable Abrams' Women's Day event. Chair, no, DG, you know, we can have a lot of discussion regarding the boat building. In actual fact, I've scheduled a meeting with the Honourable Alan Windy, the MEC, because specifically here in the Western Cape, boat building, as we were told, or the people that went to see them were told that boat building at the moment, there's no capital for that. But, you know, if you work in a harbour, it's a very small place. Everybody knows everybody. Cork Bay, Hout Bay, everybody knows everybody. And then the one gentleman went away, and then he went to talk to the other boat builder, and the boat builder said, no, but I've got funding. I did get funding from the Western Cape government. Not from any other place, but from Western Cape government. I approached the MEC. And doing research back, the MEC has made it a point that boat building in the Western Cape will be supported. He said that at the Canberra of the Chamber of Commerce meeting. Follow that up. when I spoke to the MEC, he still said to me, we were on the same flight from Johannesburg. In actual fact, we attended the same meeting. And he said to me that they are waiting for National to give them money for that. But the money that they have got at the moment, they have just funded certain projects. Now, it's been funded for the advantage areas. Now, the HDI also wants to get into the boat building industry, but their hands are tied as there are no funding. We've got everything, they've got everything, they've presented everything to them, business plans, the whole lot, in terms of the boat building, in terms of the repair, because they also want to get a slice in the dry dock. A lot of them has worked in these industries for all the years. Fishermen knows how to repair their boats.
They're not just fishermen. They also know that they can tell you, look, that boat has got the airline crack, so we're not taking it out. We need to fix that airline crack. But they can't get assistance down here. So how will the department, in actual fact, help us or help these people to get the assistance? Because it's not just to build your hobby cats or to build your catamarans and that. Boat building is quite a vast industry. I mean, you need to have, you know, with going out with buggies at the moment, it's dangerous on specifically down on your Indian Ocean. It's a bit dangerous there. So, excuse me. So this industry really, it's not looking after the historically disadvantaged in the Western Cape. Honestly, TG. I can take you to places where the people are struggling and you see the yard, the two boat building yards are next to each other. For argument's sake, one of the historically disadvantaged people has applied to use a facility just for the repair of boats. Now these guys have to take their boats all the way out to Sturrock Dry Dock to have it repaired there. You know, so it's a cost effect on them, and I mean, sometimes there's hardly any catch for them, so it's a cost effect. So we need, please DG, help us in this regard.
Sintler. Thank you, Jay. Jay, I want to start with the project in the Northern Cape, which is reflected there on page 16. I think it's slide 31, which is quite a big investment, 15 billion rand. And it says it's going to intend to create 6,300 direct jobs. Can I get more detail on that project?
And my energy one, because that was about the energy one.
Yeah. And then, the other issue is the issue about this partnership. Now, the reality is that it seems to me that these incentive schemes will be sort of the nexus of many of these partnerships, be it the other parastatals or the DFIs or whatever. But there's two of these partners that I think it's sometimes a bit problematic. And once again, I will raise it from a provincial perspective. The Northern Cape has got a development agency with all types of partners, commercial banks, this one and that one. But with due respect, that provincial development agency is not functional. It's non-existent. And it's hampering for many reasons. For political reasons, capacity reasons or whatever, but it's not functional. Now, an entrepreneur approach, a specific institution in the province, apply for funding and whatever. But because of that, specific provincial bottleneck doesn't go forward. Now, maybe it's something that at your MINMEX and so on, it's issues that you need to raise and address and so on. Similarly, Chairperson, the local government. Now, the local governments are instrumental in determining the activities in the IDP. And, you know, there's many examples, once again, in the province, where it's a wonderful project, but because of the non-functionality of the local government and the economic department, those things don't go forward. Which brings me to the other issue, the role of the commercial banks as a partner in these processes. You know, and I've got a lifelong battle, it seems, with the commercial banks. Whenever you challenge them, they say no, they look after their shareholders' interests. But on many times, they stand there with a 50 million rand check in the photo as a partner. But try and access that money, you never get it. So the commercial banks, in terms of the corporate social investment, must come to the party regarding these incentives. And that corporate social investment money has been put aside for a specific purpose. So the banks must release that money under different criteria than the ordinary lending criteria for ordinary people. Linked to that, Chairperson, the issue about, there was a slide speaking about the involvement of these schemes into Africa and other places. I don't know. I don't think Oman is in Africa yet. And that other one that... Can I just say that on principle I've got a problem with that application. Why must our companies go and beneficiate gold in Kazakhstan? Why can't they do it here? You know? So in principle I've got a problem that the department would even consider, maybe I don't have all the background, but would even consider a company going to Kazakhstan to go and beneficiate gold and don't do it here. Gold is our primary product, and I think it's saving us at the moment. But the issue, Chair, is there's many other international funding organizations, the Chinese, the African Development Bank, and so on. Now, looking in a broader perspective, from Dar es Salaam to Durban or from Cape Town to Cairo, so certainly we're going to need those people and those institutions. What is our interaction with them? If we prepare to go into these big infrastructure projects and other projects. Thank you, Chair.
No other follow-up. Yours has been taken on board about energy in the Eastern Cape. We will respond to that. You did put it in. But I don't know how you're going to do this, DG. But in your min-max, can you have a discussion on our local LED officers, because they are very key and important. That it's either in one way you speak of secondment or because they put in everybody. They can put in a teacher to lead LED. You know, that causes then a problem, even in communication, even on the projects itself, because you really need someone who understands LED, that you emphasize the importance of the person who appointed as an LED officer.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe just the specific questions. In terms of the project, the CIP project, it was a mining company in the Northern Cape, and we provided the road and the airstrip. I can get more details about the project that I can then provide to the honourable member. But what the DTI did was that we worked with the project with the province. The province was the lead partner in this in terms of putting a road and a bridge and an airstrip. And we came after the project and assisted the province in terms of providing 30% of the grant. But in terms of the private sector project, the alluvial mining project, I can get the details and update on the latest information as to how far we are with the project and send to Honorable Sinclair. The energy project in the Eastern Cape, my understanding, normally, I will have to verify this, but normally what we do, most of the energy projects, I'm sure it would be an electricity transmission whereby there is a project and we assist in making sure that there is a connection, electricity connection going to, and it would be sometimes building a substation or bringing in lines. It would not be an energy project as in having a mine, yeah.
Honourable Chairperson, are we not talking about KSD municipality?
KSD? I'm not sure exactly where the projects are located, but also again, I can provide more details about the project to the honourable member when I get back to the department. Yeah. And then in terms, I agree just in general with the observations made by the Chair and Honourable Sinclair to say that I think one of the things that does influence how we are able to reach people on the ground is the effectiveness of local government, is the effectiveness of
provincial agencies, because in most of the provinces we do work with provincial agencies. We try and work with local government. I can remember some time ago where we had a training program that covered actually LED officers, because we thought that they could assist the DTI in delivering, making sure that they get local entrepreneurs linked onto the incentive programs of the DTI. And it's a reality that you find different capabilities within different provinces and within different municipalities, and ultimately that gets reflected then in who does get the incentive and who doesn't get, because and I think it is something that maybe it needs to be elevated in MINMEC. And in terms of the commercial banks, I know when I left that there was quite a lot of engagement, especially Gabriel, in trying to engage the commercial banks and also other private sector institutions around funds for corporate social responsibility and also funds for enterprise development, because what we thought with the BBSDP, because the BBSDP, it doesn't provide collateral, but because we are able to provide funding for equipment, it lowers the cost for entrepreneurs for getting equipment. And one of the ideas was that we would be able, this money could act as kind of, you know, own contribution that the banks normally require from entrepreneurs, but that it could complement what companies are putting aside for corporate social responsibility and also for enterprise development in terms of their scorecards. And then the last issue, beneficiation of gold. I think the project, it's not that we are going to be beneficiating gold in Kazakhstan, or we are going to be doing residential and resort development. What happens is that the Omanis themselves or these other people want to do a project on beneficiation, and they want somebody to come and help them. So rather than get the Europeans, we are assisting our entrepreneurs to go there, and because we've got the experience in doing this, and so we'd like South African companies to win those contracts. It's contracts that most probably would go ahead without us, and we would not benefit anything from them. But so what we are doing is that we go there and we try and win those contracts so that we get those jobs for South Africa. Thanks, Joe.
In conclusion, then, thank you, Chairperson. With regards to, I just want to respond to Honorable Sinclair with regards to the banks in terms of their responsibility. We have met the Banking Association, I think, last year. And the reason for us meeting, scheduling that meeting, was that we wanted to establish what their appetite is in terms of risk. And we were introducing the Black Business Supply Development Program. I think they were very positive when we introduced the scheme and how we pitched it on a 35-65 basis, where the DTI was supposed to pay the 65%. They said in terms of businesses that they're doing, the enterprises that are doing business with, they will be able to can assist those enterprises. And I think now they are more positive with regards to the cost sharing that we have recently proposed. I think the problem is we pitched this thing to the Banking Association, that is now the four major banks. The problem at the moment is that they have not disseminated that information to, you know, the various provinces and the branches at lower level, so that people should be able to can through the banks access the BBSDP in terms of the cost sharing. But we have pitched it at that level.
Thank you.
Thanks. Conclusion, I think that we take the point around the boat building, and I think As I indicated, yes, I've also just heard that the IDCs had some requests, but they haven't been able to make the loans that they needed to in that industry because, as I said, because they're facing such problems in terms of sales. And so I think, obviously, the IDC has to, if they lend money, they need to show they're going to get their money back. And but I think maybe we need a package approach. But I think we will call a meeting around the boat building issue. I think they've answered Mr. Sinclair's points, and I take your point, Mr. Chair, about the LED. We will discuss that at MINMEC. But as I said, we will be, we do have a MINMEC, I think, in a week or two's time, where I think we are going to have to put this issue of outreach and having a much more, let's say, closer linkages between the provinces and the local level and the national level and so on. And then I wanted to just comment especially on the Capital Studies Feasibility Fund, because as I indicated, we want to go to National Treasury to expand this fund, which, as we could see, is only 55 million. That's why we must explain, this thing is for our engineering and our construction companies. So basically, especially the one in Kazakhstan, as you know, we've got Batemans, for example. They do all our mines and stuff, you know, they've got a lot of experience. So they are the ones who then can build these mines and beneficiation plants all over the world, and that's the ones we... So it's not our mining companies that's going. This is for engineering and construction companies. Similarly, we're doing it in... we've got a big team working with Brazil as they prepare for the 2014 World Cup. We're sending teams. We've invited the ministers from Brazil, because our companies have shown that they can build world-class stadiums at low cost and in record time. So what we're saying is we're tendering for doing some of the stadiums and the infrastructure in Brazil as well. So it's this kind of program that we want to use, because as I said, if you do the feasibility study, you get early into that markets, because usually people just give it to their own companies or to their cronies and so on, but you get that advantage on that. And then I think as I said, on the specific projects, we will then through Saraj give you more detail on the actual projects, where it's situated and what it entails.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I've just got the issue about the jobs created in the Northern Cape. I think we must differentiate between the ones that's reflected there, the Douglas one, the Louisville Diamonds one, and the one that's reflected there, that 15 billion rand. Because it's a big investment. And I don't think that those two are related. And it's quite a substantial number of jobs that's been created. So all that I want is the detail of that. If it's related to Kumba, then I think once again I've got a problem, because Kumba is declaring enormous profits at the moment, and I think really that money certainly, or that project, can certainly be used to much greater effect in other places in the province. And the one sector that we can't neglect, not in the Northern Cape, not in South Africa, is the agricultural sector. Which brings me to the issue about our practical experience in Port Elizabeth, where we went to the motor industry, and they're very happy, and they're shouting hallelujah for the lot of money that they get. And just across the road, we go to people that's doing agro-processing. And if you relate those two, in terms of money being put into one industry and the number of jobs that they're creating, they're doing much better than the motor industry with that billion that they receive. And I think we must get to the point where we start to compare apples with apples in terms of what money is going in, what number of jobs are you creating, what is the cost of the job. And I've got a slight suspicion that the motor industry, with due respect, is taking government for a bit of a ride, if I can use that pun, with the incentive schemes that they're getting. Yeah. Now, in terms of the banks, with due respect, sir, I still want to see that application that the banks approve. Maybe if you're lucky, you must bring it. Thank you.
Honorable, I will definitely do that. Yeah.
respond, I mean, to that issue. I think that, as I said, because it's our whole industrial policy approach, and as I said, we, over the past 2-3 years, we've been expanding our amount of incentives. Before, we used to only have something for the clothing industry. Now we've got something for foam, we've got for BPOs, we've got for clothing. Similarly, we never had for co-ops, we've got something for co-ops and so on. What we would like to see is to constantly expand the amount of program we have for different sectors of the economy. But what I think we must, because there's always a pressure for people to say, no, take away from this one, give it to that one and so on. I don't think the country's ever going to develop if we start choosing winners and losers. We have to constantly identify new areas. So I agree, I think agriculture is an area in agro-processing that we need to add, but not take away from autos. Because, you know, the only country standing in Europe at the moment is Germany. All the rest are collapsing around them. Now, they've got all got, as I said, but because they invested in the industrial sector, they built. And so I think you must preserve your industrial capacity. And there you're talking about the auto-type aerospace engineering and so on. But it doesn't mean, as I said, you must have the one and not the other. You must have both. And that's what I'm saying. So when we ask, I think what we must motivate then for is not to take away from autos, but to motivate for more for agriculture. And as I said, we are wanting to make that push, because what we're saying as a country, the exchange rate is killing our industry. Our companies are facing massive cost pressures. Eskom prices have gone up. You see now the port charges wants to go up. People no longer can use rail because Transnet hasn't built new railway line. So people have to put their goods on trucks and transport, and that's all the cost for the private sector. And as government, we're going to have to start coming to the party by offering more support. Because, as I said, our entrepreneurs, they're doing the best under the circumstances, but they're facing cost pressures, the exchange rate on the one end, and then the other pressures on the other. And as government, we're going to have to give more support. And as I said, within government, we must win that battle that this is our lifeblood, and we need to support them more and more. As I said, we're not going the route of subsidizing people forever. We just want to give people a kickstart and to just lower their overall cost of financing by giving them a grant. But as I said, we've now got the experience in place. Teo has learned valuable lesson of how to assess applications, how to see that it's used effectively. And as you can see, with the auto industry, we've managed to build. We're moving close to producing 1 million cars as a country. We're starting to build world-class companies. So it's not that we're just subsidizing failures. So I think we must more extend the success to new sectors all the time. And I think that we really want to, I'm raising this because we need the full support of Parliament for this push to get more resources. And as I said, the resources go directly to the private sector. These incentives, our admin costs are very low for these things. It's really straight support to the market.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I just want to comment and say a couple of weeks ago we went in on oversight in Limpopo, and two projects, one was a dairy project and one was an agriculture project, and both of them dismally failed. They didn't get support, and I think the department should actually have a monitoring system, because we went to the dairy farm and we thought we'll get some yogurt and things like that. We found the equipment outside, rusted. And six cows, very, very thin. I don't even think they can produce milk. And Mr. Sinclair. And we were very disappointed, because you could see that the farmers didn't get any assistance in training or whatsoever. And we mustn't just assist in and give people support for the sake of getting it off the budget. Because you could see that was a project that was just, this must be done, and it was done. No infrastructure whatsoever, nothing. Not, I don't know how the cows actually have water. And that, in the afternoon, we went to another project, the agriculture, and we thought, oh, yeah, we'll find some veggies, you know, milk and veggies would be nice. And again, we just found, like, a shelter, nothing else. They had the irrigation system, which must have cost millions and millions, but absolutely nothing, not one seed planted, nothing. So we must, when we exit projects, we must have support,
at least for a follow-up, and before that, actually have training, you know, if we're going to have these new farmers. But it was very, very disappointing to think that millions and millions has been spent and people haven't received anything. And then to say, it's easy when we say fine, farmers would get a stipend, because these farmers are getting a stipend of 800 and something rand for 1 year. What after that? Because there's nothing. They were sitting outside, and you could see that there's nothing happening there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I'm partly covered by what you said, because I was with in Limpopo. I was going to raise the issue on mining, where the department is investing a lot of money trying to create jobs, but the people who are working in that mine are not the people who are from the community. They are from Zimbabwe, Lesotho, and so on. I was going to ask what is it that we can do in order to monitor this, so that whenever the department invests a lot of money in that particular province, it should benefit the people who are in that province. Thank you.
DG, the issue of the automobile and the agro-processing, I'm sure it needs a debate. Because what Honorable Sinclair is saying, we went to one company which got 887 million from government or somewhere, but that created about 219 jobs. Just across the road, the agro-processing plant, they only needed 7.5 million to create 2,000 jobs. And they said they've been moving from pillar to post. I think we took it up with the department and we gave them that, can they please follow this up? I don't know how far it went, because we'd still want some answer. I think that it's coming from that angle, that you can see that you put in 7 million, you get 2,000 jobs. And it's exporting. All that ice cream and pineapples and all those things being exported. And they just needed, that was a 2 cents compared to, I think that was their approach. Last year we called in all the financial institutions. I'm sure we'll invite you this year. But it was on Africa, including NEF, IDC, BUSA, NAFCOG, DPSA. We wanted them to tell us what are they doing to advance the cause and development in Africa. I'm sure we're going to call them to a follow-up, because we called them last year in March, but we'll now concentrate on South Africa, about the co-ops, about all these programs. But what are they doing? So that's why I say we'll also call in the department, because that's very important. I think the new approach is specific and it's direct now. So we need a buy-in of everybody that we focus. You'll comment, DG, if you want to comment on what has been said, but not the DDG, because he went to the USA and he contributed to the death in the USA.
I take many of the points. I think we've taken note of the points, and as I said, we need to look at how we find solutions. And as I said, we'll try to follow up on that issue you mentioned about agro-processing and see how we can, as I said, assist that project. Because as you say, they are more labor-intensive, and so we'll definitely follow that up. I think the examples of the cooperatives, I think, as I said, our failure rate is highest amongst co-ops, about all the other businesses we're supporting. But I want to say that let's try to see how we find solutions to that problem. And maybe, as I said, we need to give not less support, but more and different kind of support. For example, I think maybe with co-ops, sometimes the problem is not on the supply side. It's not the machinery, but it's for them to sell their product. You see, because you can only stay in business if somebody buys your goods all the time. So it's to get people into that chains which they've been historically excluded from. So that's why I think we must try to smarten up our incentive. But what I will say is that we must we must look at solutions, because we can easily go the wrong direction and give up too quickly. But I think that is a difficult area. Failure rate, I mean, even if just the industry, I know the clothing industry, the failure rate amongst the people who employed under 10 people, the failure rate was 50%. Every year you had as many companies starting up as was closing down, the birth and death rate in the clothing industry. So I'm just saying that we must accept a tolerance for turnaround and for failures in the sector. But as I said, let's smarten it, let's try to constantly look at better ways of assisting. And we are, as I said, we're learning about the co-ops. We're going to have to getting more people to monitor, people to provide on the these kind of extension type offices, where you have people going out to the projects, being there, as I said, getting maybe more and better skilled LED officers and so on. Well, we will work with provinces on that. But I think more we really thank you for the feedback we're getting and on the projects. As I said, we'll try to feed it back. We'll then try to go and visit those projects again and see what we can do to improve things.
Thanks very much, Kichi, and honorable members and all the officials for your time. We request members of the community just to stay on for about 10 minutes. There are things that we need to deal with. Thanks very much, Kichi. Hope to see you very soon.